Hello, and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest this time, all the way from across the pond, it's Dr. Chris Collazo. Chris, welcome to the book club.
All right, thank you for having me, Eamon.
No problem at all. Did I get your surname right?
Yes, sir, you did.
Good. So it's one doctor from here in the NHS speaking to another doctor in America, and we've had to work around on call rotas, but here we are in the book club, and you know what's coming up first, 2000 AD origin story. So tell me, what was your first experience with the prog?
So my first experience with the prog was probably back around when 2012, when the Carl Urban Dread came out. When I was younger, I was exposed to Dread, you know, from the movie that people don't want to speak about, the Stallone movie. But I didn't actually read a prog until 2012. And ironically enough, I did find... when I was looking through some old comics from when I was younger, I actually did read the Batman and Judge Dredd crossover.
Right.
But actually, knowing what I was reading, 2012, right when the Carl Urban Dredd came out, and picked it up off and on, and then seriously started picking it up back in 2016, and been diving deep pretty much into the 2000 AD history since then.
Okay, so you've been going back and exploring, obviously, the back catalogue and the books we're going to be talking about in a minute.
Yes, sir.
Ah, right. Okay, excellent. So the Carl Urban movie doing what it should do and bringing new readers on board, which is, what we all wanted.
It's a shame that it's not getting a sequel. I would really love to see that universe explored more.
Yeah, I know. It's astonishing. We really needed another film or another two, to be honest. But, shame. Okay, so Chris, tell me, what's the book, or in fact books, that you've chosen for this episode of the Mega City Book Club?
So the books that I've chosen for this episode of the Mega City Book Club is the Tsar Wars, Volume 1 and 2 from Nikolai Dante, with the writer Robbie Morrison and various artists, but John Burns and Simon Fraser do the vast majority of the art for these two volumes.
Yes, there's also, I think, there's a little bit of Steve Yeol in there. Yeah. There's some colours by Gary Caldwell and Chris Blythe. I'll just finish off Creator Corner, lettered by Annie Parkhouse and Eddie DeVille, and, of course, commissioning editors at the time, David Bishop and Andy Diggle. And this is from 2000 and 2001, progs somewhere in around 1183 to 1262. I think there's probably some gaps in there, but... quite a long run, because as we say, we've got two volumes here. From where I sit, I can see the first three trades of Nikolai Dante, Too Cool to Kill, The Great Game, and Love and War. Tell me, why have you picked the two Tsar Wars volumes?
The reason why I picked the two Tsar Wars volumes is, for me, when I was reading it, because I read all of Nikolai Dante kind of like in a short period of time because of all of them being available digitally, it felt like it was the point where he has a major shift in his character. And I think, you know, particularly when we get to volume two, the two stories that Steve Yeowell draws, I actually kind of feel that those are a little bit out of place in these two volumes, but definitely for me, this is when Nikolai, he shifts in his character, and he's kind of not so much the devil may care, swashbuckling pirate that we had kind of grown in love at this point.
Yes, I very much felt that myself, actually. I mean, the first three volumes, he's the swashbuckling rogue. In and out of ladies' bedchambers and robberies and getting into jewels and so on. But these two volumes are sort of like the fourth and fifth volumes in the series, Nikolai Dante. Things change. So I'll ask you, let's start with the first volume of Tsar Wars. Give us a sort of like brief outline of what's happening in this first volume and what it's about for Nikolai Dante.
So this first volume actually is basically about following the end of Love and War. The Romanovs and the Makarovs are at war because of the of Juliana Makarov being killed by Konstantin Romanov. And so now they're fighting for basically power. And now Nikolai Dante is in the middle of it. And we get to meet a great group of characters called the Rudenstein Irregulars. They're from the province or district that Nikolai Dante is assigned back in the earlier volumes to govern. In volume one, we get introduced to the Irregulars. Then we follow them between their fighting with the Tsar. And we also get to see Nikolai's interaction with his family. Particularly, we get a little more distinct, I guess, character portrayals from some of the, I guess, lesser known or lesser featured Romanovs, but also get to see how Nikolai and Jenna Makarov are interacting following the events of Volume 3, and get to see basically just a bunch of good old fighting and a pretty great portrayal of war in comics, if you ask me.
Yes, I mean, it is, you know, as you say, I mean, the title, I guess, gives it away. It is the Tsar Wars. And it really is. For Nikolai Dante, the sort of the fun and games seem to be over, and it's war. And it starts with John Burns doing the artwork, which I think is the first time we've seen him do Nikolai Dante. And certainly it's the first time we've talked about him on the podcast. And he does this amazing painted artwork, which I guess we're going to be talking about quite a bit. But he... I mean, I think to sort of represent what's a change for Nikolai Dante, his appearance changes as well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, we lose the long hair and now he's shaved his head. He's basically gone into military mode. You know, I guess at least over in the States, you know, typically when individuals join into the military forces, they get a haircut. It kind of signifies a standard amongst the soldiers, and it's Dante shaving his head, showing, you know, he means business now, and he's going to take things very seriously in comparison to what he had been in the past.
Yes, he does look like a much more serious character now, as you say, shaven head, beard. He looks older. He looks slightly less sort of exuberant and swashbuckling because the war. I'm reminded from the first volume, right back in the first volume, we got this idea of Nikolai Dante that he, you know, for all his roguish charm and talents, he's very much the moral center of the story in a way, because he does have a conscience and a morality that perhaps escapes some members of his family. And he, you know, he's finding it a tough war. He doesn't like you know, losing people. He doesn't like being in conflict, but he recognizes it's something he's got to do. And I just, that was particularly struck me, that it's a real change, you know, it's a real turning point for Dante and the supporting cast. I'm sort of like thinking a little bit of the third volume of Halo Jones, where it's, you know, it's war and things change. And I think we really see that here in this volume and the next one.
Oh, most definitely. It's very brutal, and particularly when you start looking at, you know, how, or at least have you said, Dante cares about people, and you know, how he's actually invested in the group of soldiers that fight with him. To hear, you know, Dmitri Romanov, the way he talks about individuals, and you know, there's particularly a moment, I believe in volume one, where Dmitri's talking to Arkady. They're talking about how war needs to be bloody and it has to happen this way so other individuals can, you know, realize, you know, why war happens and the consequences of it. And it's just he talks more about people being as cannon fodder, essentially, in comparison to Dante, you know, seeing people for what they are. They're people, you know. What do you have when war is over and you don't have any people to govern, you know, or any people to take care of? And it's definitely, even though he's become more serious, he still feels as he's the moral compass out of everybody in the story.
Yeah, he does, absolutely. I mean, I suppose we do get a little bit of light relief because the Rudenstein Irregulars are great fun. This band of slightly, you know, dubious characters, all with their interesting personality quirks, who follow Dante. Although, you know, it's quite interesting that early on he sort of like lectures them, or not, you know, he tells them, you know, I expect you to behave in a certain way. you know, no, basically no war crimes. And if, you know, if you fight for me, then I'll fight with you and stand with you. But they're great fun in a way, you know, whenever they turn up, this bunch of strange individuals with their own weapons and talents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the introduction to these characters, you know, when you meet the Grozny gang, it's because Dante ends up killing their younger brother. And that's, you know, him proving to them and kind of he ends up fighting them and they end up, you know, reluctantly joining his group. And just the as you kind of go along and meet the other individuals, Elena and Spatchcock and Flintlock, you know, those they all have like a certain contribution to the story and a certain contribution to Dante's essentially his gang. But it feels it does feel a lot like when they're around, it does feel a lot alike of the first few volumes, just the interactions he has with people and the fun he has, despite it being during war.
Yeah, it's you know, I really love that. I you know, I love Nicolai Dante's character, but I love the his gang, as you say. They're great fun, and they're certainly much more fun than when he's his family, the Romanovs, turn up usually because they're quite, for the most part, they're very dismissive of the common soldier and the common experience of this war. Although, you know, we do, as I say, we get to see a bit more of the individual characters from his siblings, which I thought was quite interesting. I hadn't really picked up on that so much in the first three volumes, but I think we see more of the Romanovs. We get to know them a bit better here in these two volumes.
Oh, certainly, especially when you get the flashbacks from Jocasta, or I don't know if I'm saying her name right, Jocasta or Jocasta.
Yeah.
When you get the flashback of how she and Dmitri and Vladimir, when they were all younger, and the story of how they overthrew the previous dictator, essentially, it's very nice to see those flashbacks and to kind of understand why individuals are the way they are. But the voices are a little more distinct and personalities a little more distinct, I feel, for particularly the siblings of Dante. You know, granted, I feel like from the first few volumes, if I'm not mistaken, Lulu was probably the most distinctive character out of all of the siblings.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. And then maybe Andreas was the next most heavily featured.
I mean, Lulu's very distinctive looking, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, she's the seductress. She's essentially a vampire for people in the sense of that she uses and abuses people in the ways of getting what she wants out of, you know, whether it's something in terms of lust or if it's in terms of power.
Now, obviously, you know, it's Robbie Morrison writing throughout. We've come to associate Nicolai Dante with Simon Fraser's artwork, and he does turn up at the end of the first volume for the Battleship Potemkin story. But John Byrne's artwork, now, I just thought it was glorious throughout this volume and the next one. You know, he doesn't spare us the horrors of war and the horrors that Dante both witnesses and has to inflict, I suppose. And, you know, it's beautiful painted work. Tell us a little bit about what you thought about the John Byrne's artwork when you first discovered it.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I'm an original art collector, so seeing his art, you know, is just it's gorgeous. And I actually recently acquired a commission from him, so seeing it in person is even better. But when we see the change in the style, the painted artwork, it reminds me of like the books and the art you saw from like the 60s and 70s when they were putting out you know, like not really kids books, but putting out books with that kind of art. Just the work is just absolutely gorgeous. And honestly, in the first volume, I think that it's gorgeous, but he progressively gets better as the, you know, as you go from the first volume and you progress into the second volume, because by the time you end up, you know, you end the second volume, I feel like his characters are a little more detailed. It's just the painting is just more crisper. There's moments in the first volume where certain panels and certain splash pages are just great. But I definitely think he stepped it up a notch when we got to volume two in terms of just the overall art.
Okay, well, let's skip forward to volume two then, if I may.
Yeah.
So it's Tsar Wars volume two. This time I noticed that the cover, is that Simon Davis doing the cover of Tsar Wars 2? I don't think he's in the book.
Yes, sir. No, he's not in the book. He just does the cover.
Yeah. A great image of Dante here again with a bit the longer hair and the bio blades. So just tell us a little bit about what's the outline of what happens in volume two and this the ongoing war.
So volume two, it's kind of honestly, it's a little bit questionable on a couple of the stories. We know that the very first story, The House of Sin, happens around Christmas time. At what point in the war, we're not pretty certain, but House of Sin essentially is what it is Dante treats the irregulars to a night on the House of Sin to indulge themselves and ends up turning into kind of a brawl with the upper officers in the in Dimitri's army. It definitely feels a little bit more swashbuckling in when considering volume one, because there's just a little more fun, a little more lightheartedness to it. Now, the next two stories that are illustrated by Steve Yeowell, The Beguiling and Fiends, particularly The Beguiling, it definitely kind of feels a little bit out of place. But essentially, Dante is injured during a battle. We don't know what battle, when it exactly happens. He ends up being nursed back to health by the Arbatov family's daughters. And so that's a fun callback to all the hell and pain that Nikolai's caused to all the sons in that family. So it's a nice callback, but it definitely feels a little bit out of place. And then Fiends is once again illustrated by Steve Yeowell, and it follows Dante going on essentially a vampire hunt to help save the irregulars that were captured following a venture into the vampire lands called the Dark Lands to try to, not necessarily certain if it was to meet up with the family Selene to discuss anything moving forward or to actually eliminate them. And then the last portion in the bulk of the volume two is the Romanov Empire, and we basically see the climactic battle in the Tsar Wars between Dmitri and Vladimir.
Yes, and I like you. I thought the first three stories in this volume were slightly odd interludes in a way. I was sort of itching to get back to the story of the Tsar Wars. You know, the House of Sin, it's strange. I know it was in one of the end of year progs that it originally appeared in. And although it's John Byrne's art, strangely, he's got Nikolai Dante back with his long hair.
I was going to mention that, and I thought exactly, I was like, it definitely felt a little odd seeing that.
Yes, but he's got the Rudenstein irregulars with him, so I was a bit puzzled by that. And then, as you say, the Guild and the Fiend stories, they look great, and they, you know, they read great as standalones, and it is a bit more of that old swashbuckling Dante that we loved in the first three volumes. But yes, when we get back to the Romanov Empire, that was when I was really back on board. And it's interesting because you mentioned John Byrne and that sort of 60s artwork, because the opening couple of pages of the Romanov Empire, when he has these strike jets and these tripods in the water, and it look like a very sort of like 60s, almost like a Gerry Anderson science fiction show.
No, I agree with you 100%. It's definitely, when you get that art, and that, you know, in the Romanov Empire, it's just like John Byrnes is at the top of his game. Everything from that introduction to that story to the very end is just phenomenal. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the, you know, particularly the double page splash I'm looking at right at the start of the attack, and these, as I say, these tripods are just stunning stuff. And then, of course, there's more peril for the Rudenstein irregulars. There's more bloody conflict to come. Jenna Makarov's going to be back in the book as well, which, you know, the sort of on-off sparring between her and Nikolai Dante that goes on. I suppose sparring is perhaps not the wrong word, because she's very serious about it. You know, it's impressive stuff from Robbie Morrison. And as you say, John Byrne steps it up. I thought the first book was great, but here he is in the second book, and it's just gorgeous stuff.
Oh, yeah. There are certain pages and certain, you know, panels that are just – they're just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, and I know we talk about girl pages, but some of these splashes that – John Burns does in the volume, it's just the brutality that he captures, and then the panels, you know, the emotions, particularly maybe it's moving a little bit forward, but when Dante's has to basically kill all the people that are put in on and tortured by Serpent Wire, by Commander Pyre, it's just like the emotion that John Burns is able to capture in his art. It's just phenomenal. And then when we get to the end of the story and you see the emotion between Dante and Jenna, it's definitely, you know, his art was beautiful in the first volume, but it's definitely a step up for him in this one.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the episode with the Serpent Wire, a sort of precursor of Rogue Trooper's Biowire, I guess. And it's grisly and, you know, devastating. And as you say, Nikolai Dante using the Huntsman rifle to basically put the people being tortured by this terrible wire out of their misery. And as you say, what it actually does to him, what it means for the Rudenstein irregulars, and John Byrne's, I mean, obviously it's Robbie Morrison's words, and then John Byrne shows us it all. Yeah, Dante, as he says to one of his one of the irregulars, "Look away, Boris. Don't watch." It's gruesome.
It's absolutely brutal. I mean, he's having to, you know, essentially put these people out of their misery and give them mercy, but these are people that he's fought with, he's laughed with. You know, these are people he cares about. You know, we don't really get, you know, to know the other people, but the fact that he had to put Ursa, who was somebody that was featured pretty prominently in Volume 1 and Volume 2, that fought closely with him, it definitely takes a toll on Dante. And you see, you know, the emotion. You know, the final stand where Dante fights Commander Pyre, it's just definitely – it's a brutal portion of Dante's history, just to see all of the emotion, you know, after he takes out Ursa and all of the fighting that he's been going through and all the suffering that he's had to endure. The final stand against Commander Pyre, we just kind of see all of his emotions unleashed, and – everything that he's kind of held back to a certain extent just come forward, and, you know, it just changes Dante even more than what he's already been changed throughout this war.
Yeah, it is absolutely gripping stuff. And, you know, you say, talking about a change, because I suppose we should mention that he changes his name in the first volume. He's taken the name Romanov, so he's Nikolai Romanov.
That's definitely something, too, that's pretty significant, because you've seen him so, you know, in the first three volumes, he's kind of been adamant about not being a Romanov, that he's different, that he's not the kind of monster that they are viewed to be. He's, you know, he's not that kind of person. So yeah. Him taking the last name is, I agree with you, it's definitely a significant change in his character.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And of course, without giving too much away about, you know, what happens towards the end of Volume 2, it will end up with him taking back the Dante and sort of dropping the Romanov name again.
Yes, sir. He kind of goes through, you know, it's kind of where he realizes that the name, you know, doesn't really suit him, and he's definitely, you know, even throughout the story, he's never really quite portrayed to be a Romanov, though he has had some brutal moments. I mean, I guess particularly for me, and I thought it was a little out of character up into the war, was back in Volume 1, where the sergeant is defeated by Dante and the regulars and begs for mercy, and Dante blatantly kills him, you know, and seeing the brutality that's kind of been forced upon him by his family in the war. It's definitely definitely not what we expect from the rogue that we know and love.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it you know, it's a change in the character. It's an evolution in the character. And I guess, I mean, you've mentioned, I think, that Nikolai Dante is your favorite character from 2000 AD. Am I right on that?
Yes, sir. He's definitely hands down my favorite character. And it's kind of strange because, you know, everybody loves Dredd or Strontium Dog or, you know, one of the bigger characters. And to me, I think Dante's the easiest one to relate to. And because, I mean, we've all there's a certain aspects of it that that we've all experienced. And he's just he's more human, in my opinion, of the characters. He's not black and white. He's, you know, he's gray, and nobody's 100% black or white. We're all, you know, we all have some gray in us. And, but just to kind of follow him and see how he's gone through his life, it is definitely more relatable.
And of course, you know, one thing that they did, you know, which is something that 2000 AD has done with other characters, but they particularly did it with Nikolai Dante, is that he grows up. He sort of ages as the story progresses, and he becomes a sort of, I guess, a more grittier character, a slightly more cynical, and, you know, has some of the swash and buckle beaten out of him by life as it goes on. And I think that's, you know... I'm very impressed that 2000 AD allows its characters to age and develop like that. And, you know, Robbie Morrison and I guess Simon Fraser, but also the way that John Burns portrays him and Simon Davis later on, really shows that progression of Dante. It just sort of impresses me that they let him develop and mature.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't think if they would have kept him the same character we got in Too Cool to Kill, we wouldn't have gotten the excellent finale that we got in Sympathy for the Devil, or you wouldn't have been able to see him, you know, progress after the Tsar Wars. You know, I guess particularly two volumes that stand out for me are Sword of the Tsar and Hero of the Revolution, because in those particular volumes, at least Hero of the Revolution, you really see Nikolai kind of embrace, you know, the person that he's become. Despite all his faults, there's good in him, but he's really embraced who he is and what he means to people and what he can do to help people. And I think if they would have, not to point fingers at any of the other comic companies, but, you know, if they would have kept characters the way that some of the other characters have been in those companies, we would have never gotten these excellent stories. And I think it's even bolder by 2000 AD is the fact, and bolder by 2000 AD and Robbie Morrison and the artists that are a part of it, is that they let Nikolai Dante come to its own conclusion. They didn't keep publishing it just to publish it because it was a good seller or it was something that fans all, you know, wanted to read. They said, you know, we have a finite story. This is how we want to end it. And 2000 AD didn't fight it. They let the creative team end it on their terms.
Yes. It's amazing that they let them progress with that. And as you say, they had an end in sight. And when they got there, they finished the story. And that was that. And, you know, you say about how we all love Dredd and Strontium Dog. Well, after I did my episode with Matthew Ellis about the first volume, Too Cool to Kill, a couple of, 2000 AD superfans got in touch with me to encourage me to read the rest of Nikolai Dante, because they said it's one of the greatest achievements that 2000 AD has managed in its 40 plus years. I think everybody, understands the remarkable importance of this story in 2000 AD.
Oh, it's I agree with those individuals wholeheartedly. It's, and though I'm not as adept or as well versed in the whole 2000 AD universe as some of your listeners and fans, Dante to me stuck out immediately from when I picked up the first volume. And you know, it's definitely an excellent story, and I would put the story up against almost any, you know, any comic series out there, any story that people think is a classic. I would suggest if you think that, you know, that those are classics, well, give Nikolai Dante a shot, and he may just become one, your new favorite character.
Great stuff, Chris. Absolutely. So let's go back to the stories in these two volumes. And I'm guessing I know the answer to my question, but which is your favorite? Is it the war stories or is it the sort of swashbucklers that prop up from time to time?
It's definitely the war stories. The swashbuckling stories, they're great. The art, the story itself, everything is great about it. But we are reading a volume about war, and just everything about the Tsar War itself, John Byrne's art, Simon Fraser's art, everything about those part of the stories are phenomenal. And particularly for me, I think the two, you know, I know the Rudenstein Regulars and Love and War, you know, the first two stories that John Byrne's did, were, but I think his best story was the conclusion to Volume 2, the Romanov Empire. And then I thoroughly enjoyed Simon Fraser's story, The Battle of Potemkin.
Are there any particular, so you've mentioned a couple there already, but are there any particular moments or episodes in this, in these two collections that are your absolute favorites from them?
I guess particularly in Volume 1, I think one of my my favorite things is probably in the Battle of Potemkin. I don't know how spoilery I can get, but there's a callback to what a conversation that Nikolai Dante has with his brother about brother Constantine, and they're fighting, and Constantine makes the remark that the only way Dante will ever be able to kill him is if he stabs him in the back.
Yes.
And further on down in the end of the Battle of Potemkin, after the Romanovs think they have an advantage against the Makarovs, and then tides turn, without giving too much away for individuals that haven't read it, there's the moment then that Constantine and Nikolai have that is a callback to that original fight they have in Volume 1 that I absolutely loved. And it shows how dark Nikolai has become yes. with that particular action, because, you know, even though he always fought dirty and one of his slogans is honor be damned, you don't think that he could stoop as low as what he does in that particular moment. And that really stuck out for me in both volumes. Certainly there are moments between Jenna and Nikolai that pop up throughout both volumes that are, you know, that are nice and still show the chemistry between them. But that particular moment is one that I think is, at least to me, the most important the one I most enjoyed in the volumes.
I'm looking at that page in Volume 1 now of Tsar Wars, and yeah, I mean, you know, what a moment. Where Constantine says to him, still playing the hero, and he says, heroes be damned. I mean, yeah, we'll let people seek that one out for themselves because it's a great moment. And from Volume 2?
Volume 2, I think the moment that stands out the most for me personally is probably the moment they first have the battle at Rudenstein, the final stand. And when we actually get to see one of Nikolai's siblings actually stick up for somebody that's not themselves. And the moment is from Andreas, when Andreas joins the fight.
Yes.
Without giving anything further about it, it's just, it's nice to see that the Romanov siblings aren't killing machines, and you know, they don't care about anybody but themselves. It's actually a really great moment, and I think that sticks out the most for me.
Yeah, great stuff from the two volumes. But yes, I know exactly what you mean, and it is epic stuff. I particularly like the moment, and we're going to be coming back to it in a bit, but I particularly like the moment in volume two when he reclaims his name, you know, the reasons for that, and the way it's portrayed in the book. But yeah, great stuff. And if I asked you to pick just one volume of Nikolai Dante's entire history, your favourite Nikolai Dante volume to sort of take away with you on leave tomorrow or something like that, which one you would pick?
In terms of like all of the stories or the Tsar Wars?
Yeah, let's do all of the stories. You know, absolutely your favourite of all of them.
That's like asking somebody what's their favorite kid if they had children.
Too tough. Okay.
Man, I particularly love The Great Game. I think the Great Game has so much in it you get introduced to some great characters, and there's the growth that we see in Dante in that volume is definitely something that I really loved. And I guess not to be biased, but I actually own the updated cover for the trade from Simon Fraser. Another one that has a soft spot in my heart. But outside of that, oh man, I really Sympathy for the Devil. I mean, it's a satisfying end to the story. Just there's so many great things about it, and so many things that there's the serious aspects that Dante has, as we've talked about, acquired from growing up and maturing, but there's still so much of the swashbuckling that's still present there. And just the particular the scene in that volume where Dante and Vladimir are playing Russian roulette is just, it's just great stuff. It's absolutely just a blast to read. So, I mean, I guess those two volumes, The Great Game and Sympathy for the Devil, but man, you're asking a very tough question.
That's a tough question. I put you on the spot, Chris. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. It's great. And, I mean,
okay.
It's hard to pick one.
It is. Well, let's play a slightly easier game, but not much perhaps, which is the Grail Page game. So from these two volumes of Tsar Wars 1 and 2, plus the covers that are in there and so on, can you narrow it down to one or two pages that you'd like to hang on your wall?
Oh, definitely. So from volume 1, the Grail Page that I have, and I know some people might not feel the same way because it's not an action page, but I think the page in the Battle of Potemkin where Simon Fraser illustrates the family portrait, there's just something about that page to me that I just absolutely love. I just love that page, and it's kind of also, you know, similar to portrait that Burns draws of the Irregulars, but there's just something about it. And I mean, I absolutely love Simon Fraser's art, and that particular page in volume 1 is one that I would absolutely love. And then volume 2 is actually the kind of going back to your callback of Dante reclaiming his name, that page. That particular page by Burns is the grail piece from volume 2 for me.
Well, this sometimes happens on the podcast, but that would be my grail pick as well. But guests are allowed to go first, so that one becomes yours as well.
Such a great page. And then at the end, what was also too is, you know, you see Burns portrays Dante reclaiming his name, but then, like, the if I'm not mistaken, the very last page in the volume after Jenna leaves Dante is just – it's like a play on that page.
Yes.
So those two pages are just absolutely gorgeous, and it's they're perfect examples of what Burns is able to capture in terms of emotion and just the whole spectrum of the story. He's able to capture them so well in those particular pages.
Yeah, absolutely. They're both glorious pages. Jenna Makarov trying to arrest Captain Nikolai Romanov, and he says the name's Dante, Nikolai Dante. So yes, if you're having that one for the virtual art gallery, so I'll have the final page, because I'd love a John Burns page.
Definitely.
And, you know, the way he paints Nikolai Dante on those two pages is just immaculate. Yeah, standing in front of the ruins of the war-torn city. So yeah, okay. Great stuff. Now, of course, you've mentioned you're an original art collector. I should say we will post those pictures of those pages on the Facebook group and on the 2080 forums and on Twitter so people can see what we're talking about.
Perfect.
But your comic art collection, and you mentioned you'd got a commission from John Burns. So I have to ask, what did you get him to draw and paint for you?
I got him to draw and paint Nikolai Dante with his bio blades out, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if you've ever seen his art up close, but he's – oh, man, it's just – it's absolutely beautiful. The detail is just – it's just amazing. And I'd like to give a shout-out. I know it's a little early, but a shout-out to the Facebook group, the 2080 Comic Artwork Group. I wouldn't have been able to acquire that piece and other pieces of art if it wasn't for that group, particularly, you know, through Dale Jackson and then Zig. Those guys they're absolutely awesome resources for acquiring 2080 art, especially for somebody who lives in the United States. It's not the easiest to get that kind of art over here.
Yeah, I mean, it is great fun in the Facebook art groups. And as you say, Dale is an amazing resource on his knowledge about the artwork. And, of course, his enormous collection that he has himself.
Well, that collection's just – it's something to envy. It's the stuff that he's had, even though it's not a 2000 AD page, but the – oh, God, the Joker page. Why am I drawing a blank on the story? The Killing Joke.
Has he got a Killing Joke page?
Well, so it was like in the past. So he had the Killing Joke page where Joker shot Barbara Gordon. He actually had that page. I don't know what he did. I don't know what he traded it for or whatever. But I mean, the amount of art that Dale has, and it's something to envy.
Absolutely, yes, it is. Do you have a comic art fans page, Chris?
Oh, I do. I do. It's just my name, and it's not a. It's just the. You just search my name, and then I have it. I haven't updated everything on there, but I have some of my 2000 AD art on there, as well as just other comic art that I'm a fan of.
Excellent. Well, I will try and link to that in the show notes, because it's always wonderful to see people's collections. You know, obviously the 2000 AD stuff, but also other stuff that people collect. So, yeah, I will check that out, and we'll have a look. Is your John Burns commission up there?
Not yet. I actually need to get it scanned in. The page was actually – it was in a tube, so I've been trying to get it to flatten out
right,
so I could actually – get a proper picture of it. And I need to do a little correction. It wasn't – I know I said it wrong, but the gentleman's name is – or what he goes by in the comic art group is Wiggs.
Yeah.
He's been amazing, and he actually helped me acquire some other art too. So he's been a great resource and just a great guy to help get art over here.
Yes, he's helped me buy some art from Henry Flint, so yeah.
Same here. I got some Henry Flint art through him as well, so.
Excellent. Great stuff. Well, we look forward to having a look at your collection on Comic Art Fans. And as you say, do join the 2000 AD Artwork Facebook group, because it's a great resource. And it's also lovely to see people posting their collections. And they have theme fortnights for a different artist each time, I think. People post some amazing stuff.
Oh, it's gorgeous. The work is just absolutely gorgeous. I think they just had a Colin McNeil Fortnite, and oh man, the work that people had were just, it was just phenomenal.
Oh, great stuff. So Chris, thank you for picking Czar Wars Volumes 1 and 2. Epic stuff, and you know, I'm really enjoying my trip through Nicolai Dante, and looking forward to pressing on and doing the rest. I should say that at the moment, the paperbacks are out of stock on the 2000 AD store, but both volumes obviously available digitally for the Windows, Android and Apple apps, $9.99 for each volume. But of course, as we speak, the 2000 AD Ultimate Collection, which I guess you can't get over in the USA, or at least not easily, but they are printing all the Nicolai Dante stories. And by the time this podcast comes out, probably in August, I'm guessing they might have got to the Czar Wars. I know that Volume 3 has been out recently, I think.
That'd be awesome. I mean, it's always nice to own the actual physical copy of a story. You know, unfortunately for me, in my situation, I was only able to get it digitally, but those ultimate collections are gorgeous. I got the first volume, got it shipped over, and I mean they're awesome. I'm jealous that y'all are able to get those over in the UK, because I mean, and it's so, and they're so reasonably priced too. Yes. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah, you know, they're hardback collections and they're lovely. So yes, they are, you know, marching through Nicolai Dante as well. So you can get this stuff in hardback, if not now, then very soon. So Chris, guest projects, any of your own projects or social media that you want to plug?
I mean, I don't really have any projects because work keeps me pretty busy, but things I'd like to plug, once again, plug the 2000 AD comic artwork group on Facebook, as well as the Sketch Prices Facebook group. That's another great resource filled with a lot of original art collectors. They're excellent in terms of, you know, helping you find artists that you're looking for and helping point you in the right direction for collecting art. And then the last shout out I'd like to give is to my local comic shop, Paradox Comics and Cards in Fargo, North Dakota. Particularly Richard and Darren and John, they're all they've all been excellent, and it's just it's a great shop. And if anybody ever comes to Fargo, North Dakota, stop on in. Those guys will treat you right.
Excellent. Yes. Well, anybody who's near there, please do stop in. Paradox, did you say?
Yes, sir. Paradox Comics and Cards.
Paradox Comics and Cards. Check them out. And who knows, Chris, maybe they'll play this episode in the store for us.
maybe.
Turn some more people on to the wonders of Nicolai Dante in 2000 AD.
Oh, I hope so. I really hope people who haven't read any Nicolai Dante, just give him a shot. I mean, he's just a lot of fun, and he's definitely a story that if you give a shot, I think a lot of people will have a hard time putting it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Get on board with Nicolai Dante. Read these two volumes, Czar Wars Volumes 1 and 2. Dare I say it, Chris, it's Doctor's Orders.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Yeah. And thank you to everybody for listening to Mega City Book Club. Please like and subscribe and share in all the usual places. Find out everything you need to know about the podcast at megacitybookclub.com or on the 2000 AD forums, where I have a thread where I pop up all the latest episodes. And email me comments and suggestions for future books to mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And please send me your top 10 dread stories and your top 10 non-dread thrills from 41 years of 2000 AD. Send it to the same email address. That's mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to Chris for being a great guest with two great books to talk about. We'll have to have you back on next year, Chris.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to talk more Dante or some other lesser known works that people aren't reading. I'd love to get people onto different stories that they might not try.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk about that and we'll hopefully be back for some more Doctor's Rounds next year.
Sounds good to me.
And until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we'll be passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, time for goodbyes. So it's goodbye from me and...
Goodbye, everybody. Right.